Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mostly Soccer Podcast. My name is Michael J. Dalo, and today I'm here with Jimmy. Jimmy, what today?
Jimmy, tension.
Ooh-wee.
It is palpable, Michael. We are in the title race. We're in the thick of it.
You and I together.
This is for the first time in the history of the Mostly Soccer Podcast. We have a Mostly Soccer title race.
And it's terrifying. I am terrified. Every single match that Arsenal and Manchester City play. It is not an easy thing to do to be at the top, but it's good to be king.
You know, there's people who are made to be king. You know, they say that. There's people who are made for it. You are not one of those people.
You don't think I'm made to be king?
No, I don't. I think you're an emotional king. You're one of those kings when things are going great, you're a great king. You're giving. You give the people food. When things go bad, you start burning down villages out of spite. So I don't think you're someone who has that in them. I don't think you're meant to be king.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. But yeah, Jimmy, we have been entrenched in a battle, you and I, for 25 matches at this point. Finally, we have the game in hand that Arsenal have had over City finally played. And we finally had our first Premier League showdown of Manchester City and Arsenal. And I was lucky enough to be there, or unlucky enough. Depends what you think about England as a whole and that game specifically. But I want to talk about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, you need to step back because you had quite the trip, both in a good way, but more so in a almost comically bad way. I think you have to tell the people the story. I don't know if everyone knows, and I think you need to share it.
I'm shaking my head here, and unfortunately, not everyone can see it. But yeah, I described the trip as eventful because I had a lot of fun. We had a great time, and it was an absolute disaster in so many ways. So I guess from the beginning, if people follow us on Twitter, they probably listen to the podcast as well. But I'll try and condense this as much as possible. But basically, I was set to fly out on the 10th of February from Boston to London directly. 6 hour flight, 6.5, whatever it might be. Got there, Boston airport, fantastic. Got through security in about 10 minutes. No delays on the flight. Plane was basically empty. Got to move up, extra leg room. Was living my best life. I fell asleep for about 20 minutes, which never happens to me on a plane. I was feeling great.
That was a mistake.
It was a mistake. I was literally thinking to myself, and Mike was next to me, but neither one of us said it because we didn't want to jinx it. I said it to him in the eventual future. I said, that was the best flight I was ever on. However, about 3.5 hours through the flight, I just so happened, out of curiosity, to check the map, which I usually stare at the entire time of the flight. But I hadn't done it to that point. So when I did, I noticed that our destination was not set to London Heathrow. It was set to like YQT or something like that, which happened to be Gander Airport in Canada.
Oh, the famous Gander Airport.
Yeah, actually, it is kind of famous. I don't know if you're making a joke.
I am.
But I didn't know either until this all happened. That's actually the airport where a lot of flights were redirected during 9/11, and they've made a play about it called Come From Away, which is showing at PPAC, the local theater near us.
I did not know that. Wow, yeah. This is an educational podcast.
Right, I know. Everyone's learning something. But we didn't know that at the time on the plane. I knew it was a Canadian airport because they all start with like Y or Q, whatever it is. I thought it was a mistake, whatever. People around me are starting to whisper like, oh, what's going on here? Someone else says, I felt the plane turn. And then on the map, you can see that the plane has turned. Sure enough, the stewardesses are kind of like, they look worried. They're like walking up and down the aisles pretty frantically. I thought someone was having a medical emergency and we were going to have to emergency land. Turns out, no medical emergency, but there was a problem with the plane. Come to find out later, it was an electrical fire and people towards the front of the plane were actually smelling smoke.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we landed. There were fire trucks there, medical EMT trucks there waiting for us. Luckily, we landed safely in St. John's, Canada. We were rerouted from Gander and landed in St. John's, which was an hour and a half back. So we flew 5 hours and made it 1 hour closer to the UK.
Wow.
So when we get there, obviously we don't know what's going on. And, you know, the airlines, you're just at their mercy. You're a prisoner at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you know, we'll just check the flight. We should be back up and running in 3 hours. You know, obviously not. Sure enough, a few hours go by and they're like, oh, you're going to stay at this hotel and the flight will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So I spent over 30 hours in St. John's, Canada. They were busing us back and forth on yellow school buses. And
my God.
Yeah, it was snowing there. It probably snowed close to a foot the night that I was there. But that's like nothing to them. They, you know, they had it cleared and thankfully we were ready to fly.
St. John's, this is snow country.
Yeah. I'll tell you though, the people in Canada, they lived up to their reputation. Everyone there is super kind.
Well, that's nice. I mean, you got to look for the positives.
Yeah.
You got to have an experience. You weren't planning to go to Canada.
No, I sure wasn't. And St. John's is actually pretty nice, but unfortunately didn't get to explore it because it was so snowy and was not equipped for that. But, you know, at the time, obviously I was furious. However, I was happy not to be in the Atlantic Ocean.
that's good.
But is that the standard of flying now? Is that like, I made it to my destination, I'm alive. Like the airlines are like, oh, well, you should be thanking us.
Yeah, no, I know. It's sad. It really is sad that is what it is. It's like, hey, you get there. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter how long, how many extra flights you got to take. We got you there.
It's unbelievable.
I will say, I guess, you know, it was fate that you did not buy tickets for the game you had been spending weeks trying to buy tickets for.
I know. Can you believe that? that I was searching for Brentford tickets for literally like probably a month. Any way I could find them, I was trying to get them. I literally had them in my cart on like livefootballtickets.com, whatever. It's some stupid reseller that charges like 600% more. But that was my only option. I had them in the cart the night before. I was like, I'm just going to do it. And then I was like, nah, fuck it. I'll wait till tomorrow. And then I didn't make the game because the flight was canceled and moved to the next day, wow. Which really did suck. I mean, I would have been happy to spend the money and have seen the game, see a tie, which would have sucked in the end. But still, it hurt to miss the game, which is 1/3 of the reason why I was going in the first place. Mm-hmm. But still, we had Arsenal versus City and Newcastle versus Liverpool.
Which, you got to also see QPR, right?
Yeah, we did also see QPR, which is really interesting. It was pretty close to where we were staying, probably like a half-hour train ride. So it wasn't that big of a deal to go. And there were plenty of tickets because QPR are just terrible. Yeah. And
they played Sunderland, right?
They played Sunderland. Yeah, which was actually great. There was Mike, who I traveled with, one of our buddies, is a cinematographer, and he noticed that the cameras a lot of the people were using who were shooting Sunderland were not, you know, broadcast cameras. They were like cinematography. Yeah, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And it was for the documentary.
Oh, sweet.
Which was really cool. And, you know, I was not that I really know any of the Sunderland players, but they were, you know, in touching distance from me. I was two rows away from front row to the field. Mm-hmm. Which was really cool, and it cost like £30 and really cheap. But funny story from that game, we met and spoke to a German guy who was traveling, and he loves to go see old stadiums, and QPR is one of the oldest and smallest in England. So he was there, and he was complaining that he paid £20 for his tickets. He said that he's a Frankfurt supporter and he has season tickets. Can you guess how much he pays?
He's a Frankfurt supporter.
Frankfurt, they're in the Champions League.
I know they're good. That's what I'm trying to think. I'm gonna guess it's cheap and it's gonna make me mad. I'm gonna say like $500.
Yeah, he would have a stroke if he ever had to pay $500. He was complaining that he had to pay 110 euros per year for season tickets for Frankfurt.
Are you serious? Really?
I'm so serious. He said that he's paying $11 when we were back there. He said he's going, I think it was that same week or the next week, to Frankfurt versus Napoli, and it was 11 euros.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
It costs more than that to go see the Providence Friars.
Costs more than that for a coffee.
Fair point. Would you like to go see Frankfurt or would you like an Americano? I will take the Americano.
Yeah, Jimmy chooses the Americano every time.
My caffeine addiction knows no bounds.
But yeah, that game was cool. And one thing I didn't really realize before was how difficult it must be to be a manager and be on the touchline, because you can't see a thing. You cannot see an absolute thing. You just see, like, I don't know, you can only see what's close to you and you only see limbs. I mean, it's looking across an entire field to try and see what's going on the other side. And it's really, really tough. And I actually ended up reading something that said when Sir Alex Ferguson first started, that he used to watch games up until halftime from the director's box. Yeah. And then he would come down, which I thought was really interesting.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a different approach. I mean, you can't really blame it. I think that's the thing, because you get that a lot. It makes sense because you hear the managers all the time say, like, oh, I didn't see it, when they get asked about specific calls a lot of the time. And it kind of makes sense because from that angle, it's got to be really hard to be able to actually see what's going on.
Yeah, it is tough. But the travel woes didn't end there, but I guess we can break it up and say that during that meantime, I did a lot of sightseeing. I saw the Book of Mormon in London, which was awesome.
Oh, really?
So good. Hilarious. And we saw Arsenal versus Manchester City, which was the best atmosphere in a stadium I've ever seen and experienced, which was just incredible. I almost lost my voice, and that's never happened to me.
That's amazing. I mean, it was, you could hear it on the TV. I can tell you, having been over here watching it on TV, you could tell the atmosphere in that game, that the crowd was up for it. That's they were up for it. And I will say, I think the game lived up to the hype. A lot of times these big games, you know, end up being kind of, you know, just duds. Two teams kind of afraid to lose. I thought both teams really went for it. Obviously I enjoyed this game for selfish reasons, but I thought overall it was actually a really exciting game and kind of what you hope a title match like that would be.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it was fun that Arsenal were in it for what, 60 minutes? I mean, they were in it up until that third goal went in, really. Mm-hmm. And it was nuts up until that third goal, really. But yeah, I mean, the stadium was jamming. And I didn't see an empty seat in the entire place, except for directly next to me, two empty seats. How crazy is that? How crazy is
that's
that?
That's hilarious. Up directly next to me. They said they don't want to sit next to you. They knew you were coming.
It was unbelievable.
Rather not go.
And could you blame them? but Mike and I weren't sitting next to each other, and he was only a few sections away. So like, I just flagged him over, and he came and sat next to me, which was really nice.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
So it worked out. But still, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Who didn't show up to this game?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
They must have been on another. They had another flight issue.
Yeah, probably. That's the only reason I could think of. But before that game, we went to the Tolling, which is an Arsenal bar right up the street. And that was really a great experience. We had to show them our season ticket membership. Really? Which is cool. They don't let you in. It's Arsenal fans only. And then we ended up, you know, hanging out there for like 2 hours or so and drinking with two Norwegian friends that we made who both looked like Martin Odegaard. And then two English guys joined us. And it was so funny because the way we started talking to the Norwegian guys, I was like, you guys both look just like Odegaard. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're from Norway. And so we were hanging out with them. They actually, did I tell you that they knew Holland?
Yes, you said, did say, you said something about the like youth team or something like that.
Yeah, they said that they played with him on a youth team when they were like 13 or something, because they were playing like club football. They said they were both pretty good. And one of them goes, he was an absolute prick, and he still is.
He still is.
So
a little
funny.
Envious much?
I think so. But I mean, I could see that. You got to be a prick to be that good, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And there we also started talking to two English guys who actually started talking to us because, and it was so funny, they started calling Mike Santi Cazorla. And I would, I don't know why I thought that was so funny. Because Mike is short, and he does kind of have this Santi Cazorla haircut.
He's
so
got, he's a similar. It's definitely a, you know, it's a fair
similar build. But we were talking to them, and it was a lot of fun. And you know, at the stadium, we were still hanging out with the Norwegian kids, and then we started talking to some family from Israel who traveled to come see Arsenal. So it's a lot of stuff like that that makes going to games so special.
Yeah.
And so much fun, even if you don't get to see your team win, which we went 0-3 on this trip. And, you know, Arsenal's first home loss of the season, I think. And we also got to see Newcastle's first home loss of the season and probably the worst game they played all year as well.
That game, yeah. I mean, we'll get into it. That game was a disaster.
Yeah, crazy. But yeah, London as a whole kind of let me down.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the same experience I had pre-COVID. I do think that country has been hit a lot harder than we have, at least in immediately in Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. It felt like everything there was so dead, except for the really wealthy areas like Soho.
Mm-hmm.
And even that wasn't that busy. Like we left the Book of Mormon probably at like 11 o'clock at the night we saw it. And it was kind of hard to find a place with people in it. And it was a Friday or Thursday night. So maybe that's why, but still.
Wow. You heard it here first. London.
Dead city.
Down bad.
The dead city. But
that's
but I've been going on for 15 minutes here, so I'm going to try and wrap up. But I have to say, another travel mishap. Quick one. On the way to Newcastle, 3-hour train ride from London. Easy peasy, right? Wrong. We make it halfway. Train stops in York, which is about a 2-hour drive from Newcastle. Kick us off the train because the winds are too high. No more trains rest of the day. So they don't give us any option for a bus, a car, anything. They literally kick you off and they say, good luck figuring it out. Thankfully, I was able to get us an Uber. Some person was crazy enough to drive us 2 hours to Newcastle, which turned into 3 because there was a giant accident in traffic.
Of the winds.
Yeah, I mean the winds were throwing all the English people off for some reason. It was a little bit gusty and they threw a fit. And then we got to the hotel in Newcastle and they booked our rooms wrong. They gave us 1 double bed instead of 2 twin beds. So then we had to go and get another hotel room for the night for Mike. Thankfully across the street had him. But I mean, it didn't end. Every day we traveled, except for when we came home, there was something else ridiculous that had to happen. But, you know, getting to Newcastle, I thought that this place was going to be a dump.
Mm-hmm.
Newcastle is the spot in England, dare I say.
Wow. That was not the take I was expecting.
Jimmy, it is the Nashville of England. I'm dubbing Newcastle the Nashville of England. So many grooms, bridal parties. Oh, what are they called? They call them hen parties in England. Okay. But there was a ton of those. And there was live music everywhere. The people, they start drinking, I don't know, must be at 5 p.m. Because at 8 p.m. there are people on the streets vomiting every night. I'm not joking. I wish I was. People there drink until they are literally falling over. And, you know, we walked into a bar probably 11:30 at night, which is, I mean, that is, by that time, they've already drank like 30 beers.
They've already passed out and woken back up and gone again.
Seriously, this guy, we walked into this bar and this man was falling down the stairs and people were holding him and he's yelling, bouncer, bouncer. And he had his eyes closed. And some other guy wanted to fight him. The man couldn't even stand. And then, you know, I walked in and I'm like, what's going on here? The guy next to me. And he's like, I don't know, man. What the fuck? He's like, no, English dude, all jacked up. Like, okay.
Oh, God. You had quite the experience.
I'll tell you what, though. Newcastle was a lot of fun. That's a good spot if you're going to London and you want to take a 3-hour train ride and experience something different, that's a lot of fun. It's super cheap up there too. For like 2 beers, it was like £7. I mean, it's significantly cheaper than being in London. I think for like a coffee, a croissant, and like a bottle of water, I paid like £4, which is like $4, $5, or $6.
$6, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's it's the spot, and the people there are friendly.
Oh, well, that's the way to go. See, you get a positive out of it. Positives came. Might have been a rough way to get to them, but you got to them in the end.
I did. And it was fun. We had a great time, but you know, traveling is just a nightmare. Anytime you go anywhere, it feels like it's a nightmare. But I think Europe especially is kind of a difficult scenario to travel comfortably in the first place. Yeah. If you're a spoiled American, you might feel that way. Mm-hmm. But I think traveling in general is just in the shitter right now.
Yeah, it's a bit rough. A bit rough.
And last thing I'll say is the Newcastle game. We saw Newcastle versus Liverpool. Did a stadium tour in Newcastle. St. James Park, really, really cool. And Newcastle did a great job with like every other seat had one of the war flags on it. Really? So we were waving the flag. We were cheering, and you know, it took all about 10 minutes for that to stop after Newcastle just capitulated.
Nick Pope took care of that one for you real fast.
That happened literally right in front of us. And it was just like, it looked like he just fell.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
It was very bizarre. He just did not, he did not want to play in the Carabao Cup final. That's all that was about.
That's for sure. But yeah, it was an eventful trip. I'm happy to be back on U.S. soil. Nothing makes you appreciate being home more than going on a trip like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, either way, I'm glad it was fun for the parts that were fun. Happy to have you back. You got to have some really interesting experiences. And I mean, we can jump right into the game if you're ready. And I can lead us into it, give you a second to breathe.
Please do.
But I will say, I was very jealous that day knowing you were at that match, getting to see. And like I said, both teams were up for it. So going into it, I think both teams have been, I don't want to say poor. I feel like poor is too harsh. But neither team has been the team they were pre-World Cup. Arsenal have had a little bit of a wobble, and City have had a big bit of a wobble. City have not looked themselves at all, really. I think they've... Overall results have not been terrible, but they haven't looked like the team they were at the beginning of the year, where they were putting 5 and 6 past people.
Right.
So going into this, it was really set up to be a good battle. I think both teams lined up with what would be their strongest lineups at the time, with the exception of City playing Bernardo Silva at left back, which was an interesting choice, especially playing Bukayo Saka, who, you know, arguably player of the year, definitely up there for it. It was a bold decision by Pep. In the end, it kind of worked ish. He did well. He got away with a lot of fouls.
As does everyone who plays against Bukayo Saka, right? You just do whatever you want to him.
Yep, fair point. But in the end, this was a very competitive match. City get the first goal after a mistake by Tomiyasu on a back pass, where Kevin De Bruyne with an amazing finish, very creative, chips it into the near post, scores a goal. At that point, Arsenal had been the better team by far in the first half, had really dominated. And in the end, they dominate possession this entire game. I want to say that they finished with upwards of 64% possession. City did have more shots. I think Arsenal had more shots, but City had a lot more on target. But Arsenal then reacted very well, come down the field, and they get a somewhat, in my opinion, very controversial penalty given.
So that was opposite side of the field for me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really see what happened. All you kind of see is like the jumble of bodies, and then the referee points to the spot. One interesting thing is, I don't know if this is true for every stadium. I think it is because they didn't show us in Newcastle either. But whenever there's a VAR check, you're completely in the dark if you're in the stadium.
Really?
Yeah, they don't show you anything. You don't know what's going on. It's literally just like it's like a game of telephone. It's like it starts from the people who are closest and it works its way back up to you. And it's just like people are like, oh, I think it's a penalty. I think Ederson's getting a red card. No, he's not getting a red card. And it's really funny. And it is not really a fun experience, but, you know, the community of it, I guess, makes it fun, even for a shitty thing like VAR. But watching that replay back after, I don't know that it's a harsh penalty. I don't know that it's a dead-on penalty. But I think if you call it on the field, as they did, it's a hard one to overturn.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I just want to use this as an example to talk about how inconsistent and awful the refereeing has been this season to a new level. I feel like we've talked about it ever since we've been on the podcast, but this season has been like...
are getting fired. People are getting fired. Arsenal were robbed in the Brentford game.
Yeah, Arsenal robbed City, the United game. The Marcus Rashford worst call I've ever seen.
Incredible.
Like there's been calls that have gone really, really bad. And my issue with this call was, as long as I've been watching the game, I've never seen that type call the penalty. I've always seen the goalkeeper given the benefit of the doubt there, where that's not usually called the penalty. Because he did stop. Like, he didn't go through him. Like, it wasn't the usual one, you know, where the goalie dives out and they take the player out. He stopped as much as he could. There was contact. I don't agree with the call, but neither here nor there. It's given, and Saka finishes beautifully, ties the game up. At that point, I'm seething. You're sending me texts that Arsenal are going to win. They're going to destroy City. City are terrible. They're getting dominated.
They did. They got worked in that first half.
And they did. They absolutely did. They came out. The second half was a different game. And this we debated, you and I, through text during the game. I felt that City came out and looked actually really, really good in the second half. I thought they were a much better team in the second half than I thought Arsenal dominated the first half. I thought City dominated the second half. I don't think Arsenal really created much after halftime.
They didn't. But I mean, when you're it's hard when you're there to really see, like, if you're not sitting in the dead center like you are when you watch TV, you get every perfect angle. It's hard. It's like the team with the ball looks like they're better. And it sounds so stupid, but like that's what it looks like when you're there. Yeah. And you're kind of far away from the action. But like City just didn't do anything impressive. Like, all the goals they scored, if I'm not mistaken and I'm remembering correctly, they were all mistakes from Arsenal.
Like, except the last one.
Yeah, the last one was a nice play. It was great. But like, aside from that, I mean, I still think Arsenal were the better team. Like, City jumped on their opportunities, and Arsenal dominated the game, I think, possession-wise. And it just didn't really feel like this. It was that City took the game over in the second half. It was more like Arsenal gave away a second shit goal, and then from that, they were chasing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean... Either way, I thought it was a good game. I think it was.
It was great.
It was an example of, and this is what's going to dictate this title race, because we're going to talk about it in the games like right after this that followed. You have to take your chances. You have to put your chances away when you get them. Where if this game's a great example, the best example is what happened, in my opinion, after this game, which is Arsenal coming back to win 4-2 against Villa with last chance, taking your chances, bouncing off of Emi Martinez's head. But
that's
like
my favorite goal ever.
Getting the goals you have to get is what win you the title race. That absolutely. Like, I always and I know it's jumping around a bit, but this is going to be a frantic podcast. It's already been, you did like 20 minute spiel about but at the same time, City coming off this Arsenal game, it looked like it lined up for City to go on one of their runs that we've seen them do time and time again. And then they drew 1-1 against Forest in a game where City were as good as City have looked all year. In my opinion, like, that was the prime City. They looked like that good and then just could not put the ball in the net. Keylor Navas played great, as he always does, because he's a great keeper. But Haaland had two chances he missed. Phil Foden, this was his first real run back in the team, and we're going to talk about him in a little because I think he's going to have a real role if City actually make this title race now. But if he passes the ball to Haaland, it's a wide-open goal for Haaland to tap the ball in. He chooses to instead shoot himself and took too long to do so. Like, City should have won this game. They don't put it away. Right after Arsenal found a way to come back and win a game, that's the difference. It's 5 points right now, I believe. We sit here, 25 matches played apiece, 60 points for Arsenal, 55 for City.
Yeah, and you know, I was shocked when City dropped points against Forest. I thought, too, that that was going to be kind of the turning point. When I went there, I felt like that game against City, and I think a lot of Arsenal and probably City fans felt this way, too, is like, if City win this game, City are going to win the league. And if Arsenal win, an 8-point gap with the game in hand is too much for them to come back from with the way Arsenal were playing. That's how I felt. And I have to say, after that Arsenal comeback victory against Villa, where they did not look good in the first half, it felt like we were crumbling. Typical kind of last season stuff when we needed to win. We lost every single match towards the end of the season. That was important. This game, however, against Villa, it felt like that goal that came off the back of Emi Martinez's head, that's a goal of destiny. That is the goal that I can firmly say now that I believe Arsenal will be champions at the end of this year.
I mean, I can't really argue with any of that. It was very, very fitting. Jorginho, too. Very criticized since coming to Arsenal, has not played very well. An amazing strike. Like, that was a hell of a strike. I know it went off the goalkeeper's head, and it's not his goal, but a hell of a strike.
Yeah, I mean, Jorginho, I mean, I think since he's come in, I mean, he had to take Partey's place in the City game, which was a huge loss, by the way. I think if Arsenal have Partey, who is arguably their most important player aside from Saka, in that City game, potentially a different game. However, Jorginho was probably Arsenal's man of the match in that one. And then followed it up with that strike at Villa, which, you know, has potentially changed the title race again. And from there, he's been super solid, has been a great replacement for Partey. However, I will say when Partey's back in the team, Arsenal are so much different. I mean, we saw it in the second half against Everton yesterday. Like, he has just been a force.
Yeah, no, it's their whole team's played really well. And Nketiah, I think, needs to get a lot of credit. I thought he was really good in the City game. I was really impressed with him. I think the whole team has played really well. I mean, there's a reason they're in first place. There's only 13 matches left. Like, we're getting to, like, we're at the business end. We're getting there.
Terrified.
And it's a real possibility. I'm interested to see what happens this weekend. I think City and Newcastle is a tough one. If City lose that game and Arsenal beat Bournemouth, that's a real tough one to come over. And, like, that's the thing, is like every game now you feel the pressure.
Yeah. And the gap between 5 and 8 points is, it feels major.
Yeah, it does, because and that's the thing, is you feel the pressure. The question's going to be, City have been there. They've done this time and time again. Arsenal now are going to have to deal with the pressure for the first time. And, like, to your point, they dealt with it in that Villa game. That was – if you had told me they crumbled and they lost that game after losing to City, it would have made so much sense. But they didn't let it happen. They really didn't. And then they went out there and they kicked Everton's ass yesterday. Like, they kicked their ass up and down the field yesterday. Yeah. Like, this is a team on a mission. This is a team playing, starting, looking better too. The last few matches, like, looking a little bit more like themselves. It's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to be a battle. I think it's going to come right down to the end. Yeah. But I've been so impressed with Arsenal. I've been so impressed with how they've done it. I think, honestly, in some ways, I feel like they haven't got maybe enough credit, some of the players that should have gotten more credit. I think I'm not talking on Twitter, because the Arsenal fans are just as annoying. Every fan is annoying, is what I've learned. Every single fan is annoying. There's no team whose fans are not annoying. But to do this where they are and to do this without Jesus, who's been out for so long, like if they get him back, I think Trossard has been such a great signing. I have to say,
I knew that one was going to be, a good one. I mean, Trossard's so good.
You and I have both been like a big fan of him for a long time. I think we've like hyped him up on here a long time and just such a great signing. He's one of those players, whenever he's on the field, I feel like he can always do something special. He has that ability. He almost is one of those players where like, he should be better than he is. Like, he leaves me always thinking, like, why are you not better? Because it's like when he does something, it seems so effortless.
Right.
But he's a really good signing. I think it's been a very strange year in terms of the league. When I look at the standings, it's so odd. And I want to talk a bit about United when we finish with these two. And my last thing I'll say with City is City have not been good, in my opinion. Like, watching them play, I don't think they've played very good. I think this is a team that needs a major refresh, which is not really a surprise, because when you look at a team of City's stature and a team that usually spends money like crazy, has not really spent a lot of money for multiple years now. They last year they bought Grealish, which again was, you know, 100 million, but that was really the only first team signing. This year they brought Haaland and Alvarez in again, but for not a lot of money. And again, that's in Calvin Phillips, who hasn't played.
Yes.
He's been hurt all season. He's finally back and quite frankly hasn't looked very good when he has played. But like, this is a team that needs a refresh. They need a lot of, which is crazy to say when you look at the names there, but like, players need to move on. Like, I think there is a need for a refresh there. And I think we're going to see that in the summer, as long as different things outside of actually playing on the field don't come to effect. Like, you know what I mean? We don't know what's going to happen with City. I don't know if we even talked about that too much. I mean,
I don't think so. I don't think we've podcasted since then.
Like, the whole, I think we did once, and I think I just said that I think it's bullshit, which I still do think it's bullshit. But whatever happens will happen. I don't believe City are getting relegated. I don't believe that they're going to get a, you know, they're going to get a point deduction that's going to knock them out of the Champions League. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it will. But I think City are going to plan to spend big. I think they're going to be in on the big names. I know they want Bellingham. I still don't think they're going to get him, because I think when it usually comes to with the exception of Haaland, when it becomes a battle of like the biggest team, City is when they weirdly get cheap. Like, they want to spend 60 million on everybody, but they don't want to spend 120 on anyone. It's just what they, like, you know what I mean? They're more than happy to like spend 20 million more than somebody is probably worth, but they refuse to go and buy the guy who's up there and everybody wants. That's really what they've refused to do. And the only reason they probably got Haaland was because of release clause. Because if it was a bidding war, I don't think they would have won him.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see. But there are going to be changes, and I think there needs to be, because I think Arsenal are just going to keep getting better. I think Arsenal are going to reinvest and bring more people in. I think Arsenal, they're already a young team. Like, let's be clear, like, Arsenal are a young team and they're going to get better. And I think what I want to talk about, unless you have more to say about Arsenal, is I do really want to talk about that damn Manchester United.
I want to talk about United in a second, but two things is, one, I think Arsenal are going to get better. And I really do think they're going to sign Declan Rice this summer. I think that's the person they want, and I think he wants to come. And West Ham have been so bad that I think he'll be willing to make the move. So that's really exciting. I hope that one works out. And two, your point about City not being that good, I fully agree with that. And I'm not throwing shade or trying to be salty. I think it's just the reality where they've been sloppy all season. Like, you know, they can come and beat Arsenal 3-1 at the Emirates, and then they can go to Forest and draw 1-1 after they have 40 shots. They don't like I went into the City game and I was scared of City, but not like in previous seasons. I was like, this is a team like you can go and you can beat. Like, I'm more scared to play Newcastle at St. James Park in a few months than I was to have City come to Arsenal, who inevitably proved me wrong. But like, you know what I mean? They're just not the same team that they were 2 years ago or a year ago. It feels like they lost a little bit.
It's what they lost is a hunger, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, and that's why I think they need a refresh. because I think they have a lot of, and they moved Cancelo on, obviously, like technically still a silly player, but playing for Bayern on loan. Like, I think Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Aymeric Laporte, like there's players who I think if they had their choice would move and go for a new challenge. And I think they need it because I don't think any of those players are at the level that they should be for the level of player they are. Cause I think they're a little complacent and I think they need a new challenge. And I think everybody needs that in life at times. Like, you know what I mean? There's nothing against them. Sometimes you need a new challenge. I think, and that's why I think bringing new blood in will help. Like that's what I think. And sometimes you also just get out of form. Phil Foden's been out of form up until like he's played well the last two games. He's been really, really good and he's looked like Phil Foden. If he comes back now into the team, that could be a big addition to City, having him back playing well. Jack Grealish is finally looking like the Villa Jack Grealish. Took a year and a half, but he's been City's up there with Haaland as the best player and Rodri as well on the season. Like he's been that good now. Like he's finally looking good. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes things to gel. Sometimes you just need to move people on who might be complacent.
Yeah.
This Arsenal team's not complacent. No. This United team is not complacent.
No. Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, I could talk about Arsenal for another hour, but let's talk about United, who recently just won the coveted Carabao Cup.
Woo.
And by the way, I say that, you know, backhandedly, the coveted Carabao Cup, but the people in Newcastle wanted the Carabao Cup so badly.
Carabao Cup's a good cup. It's a good cup.
It's shit. but it meant a lot to both of these teams who haven't won a trophy in a while. I mean, United, what has it been since 2017, I think, when Mourinho was there, which is a long time for Manchester United especially. And then Newcastle, I can't remember the last time they won a trophy. But, you know, being there the week prior to this game, fans were devastated when Nick Pope was sent off. Mm-hmm. They were concerned. Who was it? They were concerned about Bruno because he hadn't played. So they didn't know if he'd be out of form. And the coolest thing in Newcastle and just how much they cared, on every window of like every shop, there was a mural of a different Newcastle player or Eddie Howe with like the, oh, we're going to Wembley song or whatever they do. So it was a special game for them. And you know, I felt really sorry for them when they inevitably lost, and they did it in kind of a similar fashion in which they lost to Liverpool the week prior, where they came out and they played well for the first 10 minutes. And then they just give up a goal kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it's tough. I was hoping for a better match. I mean, Newcastle have been very, very good this season. Like, that has to be said. They've been very, very good. They're ahead of schedule is how I'll put it on their rebrand, their refresh, their investment. Eddie Howe's been a great appointment. I mean, this is a team fighting for top four. I want to say they're fifth as we speak, because I think Tottenham are in fourth now, if I'm correct. But they've played him very, very well. They've hit a little bit of a blip here, you know, over the last few. But this is a team that competes, plays hard. And I think it was tough to ask for them to win that one, because I think United have been just such in great form. And to be with your really kind of third string goalkeeper, because I know Dubravka he's cap tied because he played for United, right, on loan at the beginning of the year. So he couldn't even play, and you got stuck with Karius, and we know what Karius is.
However, Karius, was he at fault for that second goal? Not really. I thought he played okay, but that save at the end, by the way, I had the under. I had under 2.5. And that save at the end that he made against Bruno Fernandes was just magical. He saved the under on a 1v2 versus legend. Bruno Fernandes. What an absolute legend he is. But yeah, Manchester United, I mean, in that game specifically, I'll say that I don't think they played very well. But one thing I've noticed about United this year, every time I've watched them, is that even though I don't think they've played particularly well in a lot of games, they always find a way to score. Like the game against Arsenal a few weeks ago, or a month or two ago now, like they were dog shit. And still, they pulled two goals out of nowhere. And, you know, they make everything a game. They play hard. I think, like you were saying about Arsenal, it's a team that's not complacent anymore. The people that want to be there are in the team. And the folks who have kind of held them back for the last few years are not playing so much. And, you know, I think Ten Hag is in the process of building something special there.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing, is I think that they, for the first time in a long time, really are in the right direction. Like they're making the strides. They look more like a team. Like they look like a team. They're playing together. They clearly have a spirit to them. Marcus Rashford's just out of his mind right now. He's going to get himself a hell of a contract. But they have a good spirit to them. They have a good fight. They find ways to get goals. Like you said, like they just find a way, which is what you need. And I mean, this is a team we have to talk about. I mean, they're on 49 points, game in hand. They win that. They're only 3 points behind City and only 8 points behind Arsenal at that point. Like they're damn near close to actually being in the title race. Like, I don't think anybody really quite considers them there, because I think it's a little too soon. But to see the difference that they are from where they were last year, like they were just a joke at the end of the last season with whatever the hell was going on.
In the beginning of this season, they were awful too. Don't forget they were losing 4-0 to Brentford.
It's true, but I mean, I think that is a bit harsh on Ten Hag just coming in and having the whole Ronaldo fiasco and dealing with all that shit that was going on at the time. And I think they play well. I think they have good players. I think the scary thing is United are going to make investments. Talk about teams going to make investments. They're going to continue to bring in players. And I think they've done a much better job this season with the people they've brought in. We'll see what happens if they can get Jadon Sancho playing well again. I mean, he scored a goal recently. If he comes back into it, I still think they need some defensive help. And I think that they could use another actual striker, to someone to complement Rashford a bit more. But I mean, Weghorst is actually not a bad option up top in the short term. I just think I've been really impressed with them. I think that they are a lot better than they expected them to be this soon. And I think the difference of having a real manager who has a plan and a system that they want to play is it's important. And a manager that's bought in. Because the reason I want to say that, and I know he's going through some health things now, so I don't want to take a shot at him necessarily, but Tony Okonte at Tottenham has never really seen, like, we all agree, amazing manager.
Mm-hmm.
But from the beginning, has never looked like he really bought in to truly caring about being there. And, like, it fits exactly how that team plays, which is they're really good sometimes, and sometimes they absolutely suck.
Yeah.
And it's like you don't know which one you're going to get. They can beat anybody and lose to anybody at the same time. And they all don't necessarily look like they know what they're doing all the time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they don't always look bought in. Some games, like, you see it, like, the heads go down. You see it with that team, the heads go down.
Yep.
I have not seen that from United. I liked it more when we got to laugh at United. I don't like saying good things about them. But, like, going into next season, they go into this offseason and strengthen this team. I'm going to say that, like, they're going to be a legitimate contender next season.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And everything you said is correct. Like, they've been incredible. They have a lot of fight in them. Ten Hag's doing a great job. One thing I'll say, though, Marcus Rashford is playing out of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Marcus Rashford is as good as his current form suggests. And that might sound like a shot at him, and it's not. I just think it's something like, do you remember, I think it was at the beginning of last season where Son was scoring ridiculous goals every single week.
Pretty much all of last season, really, right. But specifically the beginning
The beginning, right? His XG was like, I don't know, if it was 0.10, he was scoring like two goals that game. Mm-hmm. It was something ridiculous like that. And it's just stuff like that. It tends to fall off. Like, Marcus Rashford is a great player. Do I think that he will remain at this level where it's like, oh my God, he's as good as Mbappe right now? Like, no, I don't. And then I think when he starts to fall off a little bit, I think the team will drop with him. So, like, I don't know that United are title contenders. I don't think they are personally this season. And I don't know. I they need a lot more strength than I think we're seeing right now.
Mm-hmm. It's
a little bit too soon for me to be, you know, they're in the title race for next season. But if they get a few more pieces, I think so. I mean, especially if they sign someone huge like a Neymar, which they might.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly how I feel. I think you're right 100% with Rashford, which is he deserves all the credit in the world for how well he's playing. Do I think this is his level? No, I think he's playing above his level.
100%.
But I do think his level, I think maybe he's back to being what we thought he was going to be, at least, which is a world-class player. Like, I think he can be back to, he can actually reach that now. Like, it looked for a while like it might have been done. Like the Rashford thing might have already been kind of done. Mm-hmm. And it looks like now he's going to be a great player, which, you know, they need. But they need to continue to build, though. That's the thing. And the thing is, they'll spend. We know they're going to spend. Like they've been consistent with that. They will spend and they need to.
Yeah. Also rumors of a potential takeover there. So if that happens, they'll spend even more.
Yep.
But we're running up on 50 minutes or so here, Jimmy. I want to talk about quickly Chelsea, who have, I can't remember the last time Chelsea have won a game. And I love that. I mean, they spent what, $600 million in January. Yeah. And Mudryk can't even stay on the field for more than 45 minutes. Half their team doesn't want to be there or is on their way out. Graham Potter, I do feel for him. I think that Graham Potter is a really good manager, but I don't know what's happening there. Like, this is shambolic.
So I looked it up. They've won one game in 2023 on January 15th against Crystal Palace in all competitions.
Yikes.
That's it. That's crazy. They're really it. Every single game that goes that they don't win, it's kind of crazy. It really is kind of crazy. And I mean, I feel for Graham Potter because it's kind of they're a mess. Like they've been so many injuries. I know they've spent all this money and bring people in, but bringing someone in doesn't mean that they know how to play and can jump right in and play. Like, it just doesn't. And also, I don't agree with a lot of the signings they made. Like, I don't think the logic with it. Like, this is a team that still doesn't have a striker. With all the money they spent, they don't have an actual striker. Like, unless you consider João Félix a striker, which I don't. He's not really an actual striker. He's more of like a false nine, really, type of player. He's not really a striker. They don't have one. Kai Havertz is their striker, and Kai Havertz isn't a striker. He also stinks. But they just haven't solved a lot of the issues they have. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but it's a very, very strange team. A lot of money has been spent. There's a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they can do. I feel for Graham Potter in a sense that I agree with you. I actually think he is a really good manager. And I do think when he, as it looks, inevitably gets fired from Chelsea, some team is going to get a great manager because he's going to end up having to go to a lower team than he probably should. In lower team, it sounds so stupid, but you get my point of like, I think somebody's going to get a really good manager because I wouldn't blame him if he, quite frankly, I wouldn't blame him if he wants out at this point either.
Yeah, it's not been a great relationship there. But I have to give Chelsea credit, who are notorious for, you know, losing two games, then sacking a manager. They've really committed to Graham Potter. And I mean, at this point, what do you have to lose by giving him the season and the beginning of next, right?
Yep.
Unless he continues like awfully down the rest of the line, then maybe you have to consider it. But
yeah, because I mean, at this point, I think you have to write off top four, because I know when they like made all the signings, it's like, oh, they're pushing for top four. They want fourth place. Like that was the goal, was fourth place. They're not getting it. They have 31 points. Like it's not happening at this point. Like, I think they need to accept that. I think the best thing is let him figure out which players are staying, which players are going, sort that out, get people, move people on, get yourself an actual striker.
Yeah.
And then go forward from there. Cause I do think some of the people they brought in have looked decent. Like, I don't think they've all looked bad. I don't think any of them are like bad players either. I like the center back quite a bit, and I'm going to butcher his name trying to say it, so I don't even really want to try. But the Badiashile.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's – I actually been pretty impressed with him. I think he's pretty good.
Benoit Blanc.
Yeah, Benoit Blanc. he has – but you know what I mean? Like, there's people there that have talent.
I would hope so. Every player costs 100 mil for them. So,
yeah. I mean – It's been a bit of a mess. Like, that's the only thing you say. It's a mess. It is a mess. They need to move people on, need to clean up shop, and then go forward from there. But there's crazy talent. I mean, if you look at that roster, like, it's insane the amount of people that are there.
Yeah, it's a shame that they are where they are because they have spent so much money and there's so much talent there. But this is what Chelsea does. You know, they'll finish in 10th this year and then they'll win the league next year. I mean, it happens on a cycle of like 5 years, and it happens every time. So they'll be fine, I'm sure. I kind of hope Graham Potter stays. Like, I don't want to see Chelsea be successful, but I think that this is harsh for him if he is to get fired soon. However, I mean, the results are pretty damning. I guess since we're coming up on time, maybe we should just talk quickly about two teams. I think we can just talk about Liverpool and maybe Everton.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Liverpool are the most confusing team in the league by far.
Yep. Yeah, that's perfectly said.
I mean, they sit in sixth place on 39 points, a game in hand on Spurs. So really potentially only 3 points off top four, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, it feels like they've lost like every game this year, and yet they still have 39 points.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think they're really confusing. No, I don't know how to say, because you're 100% right. They're really, really confusing. They don't look good. Very rarely do they look good. But they've won more games than you probably think they have. And they've done enough. I mean, I think if you look at their game against Real Madrid, it tells you everything you need to know about this team, which is that they're defensively a horrific team. They're a very bad defensive team, which is weird to say with a team with, you know, Virgil van Dijk, the greatest defender of all time.
He's been getting cooked lately by everyone.
But yeah, and I mean, in his defense, when you're paired with people like Joe Gomez, who and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who have no clue how to defend, like just not a clue in the world. It's kind of hard at times to be able to, or Joel Matip, if you watched him in the game against Crystal Palace, he did everything he could to give Crystal Palace a goal. I mean, that guy was trying. He really was trying. So I do have something there, but this is a team that needs to make some improvements on the defensive end.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sick of hearing that they don't spend, though, when they brought in the Mr. 100 million pound man, Darwin Nunez, and then also brought in Cody Gakpo spent in the January window, bringing in Gakpo. Like, it's not like they haven't spent any money. So like that narrative needs to stop. This is a team that spent money. They bought Luis Diaz last January too. Like, they've bought every window. They have bought routinely, have continued to buy. So this is not a team that doesn't spend any money. Do they need to spend money? Yeah. Do they need a refresh? Absolutely. But let's not pretend they don't spend money, because that narrative drives me crazy.
Well, that's Jurgen Klopp, who is the potentially the biggest crybaby manager of them all. Yeah. I have to say, when things aren't going right for Klopp, he is insufferable. Mm-hmm. Second to Klopp, or maybe just before him, Sean Dyche at Everton. Getting a lot of good press lately. Seems like a nice guy. Been on a lot of podcasts. Fuck Sean Dyche. and fuck Everton. I used to like Everton quite a bit. If you go back to the early days of the podcast, I used to say, oh, you know, Everton's probably my second favorite team in the league. I hope they go down. I want nothing to do with them anymore. Unlikable bunch, unlikable manager, unlikable football. So glad Arsenal battered them. And the only thing really good about Everton right now is their fans, who, you know, they have very kind fans, very nice people, at least in the States, that we've podcasted with and become friendly with. But aside from that, I am fully rooting against them. And I have to say, looking at the table, I think they're the worst team of these teams in the battle. I think it's between Nottingham Forest and Everton to go down and potentially Leeds. I think Bournemouth and Southampton are set in stone.
Yeah, I was going to say Southampton. If you're saying the worst team, Southampton are the worst team. Southampton are bad.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, they're really bad. Talk about team doesn't defend, doesn't try. They're bad. But yeah, I mean, Everton are bad. Wolves, I know, have a lot of talent because they've brought in like people constantly, like pretty high name people. Just don't really look good when you watch them play. Just a team that just really doesn't like. When you watch them, you don't see it very much out of them. But I agree, they're better than Everton. Everton are bad. I will say, Forest have a million players. They're Chelsea on a smaller scale. As opposed to spending 100 million, they spend 20, but they spend just as many players. But I honestly think I want to say again, Keylor Navas, what a signing! Like, he's going to be worth a couple points enough. That might be enough to keep them up.
Yeah,
because he's that good. And so they're decent. I kind of think I agree with you. Everton will probably go down. I think Leeds are right there too, because Leeds are a sloppy team too. You don't know what you're going to get out of them. You know you're going to get effort, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'm concerned.
They don't have
for
a real
Leeds.
Manager.
I'm concerned for them, but I'm hopeful that Everton will go down just for the sheer comedy of it, and no more Sean Dyche would be ideal. Although I think he'll still keep coming back into the Premier League somehow. He'll probably end up managing West Ham or something.
Can't get rid of him.
No, you really can't. And he'll take points off Arsenal every year. It's just vicious cycle of Sean Dyche that I can't escape. But anyways, Jimmy, we're coming up on time, so let's hit some predictions and then say our goodbyes for this episode. And we start rapid fire Saturday, March 4th, Manchester City, Newcastle. Huge game. Who do you have?
2-0 City.
One,
they have to
one. One, oh. One. One, 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 one. I think Newcastle will tie this game because Manchester City can't pull out random goals like Liverpool and Manchester United have pulled out against. I forgot who they played, but it was Manchester United and Liverpool pulled out 4 random goals against Newcastle after Newcastle played very well against them for a period of time.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. I think City will win.
They probably will, but I'm hoping for a draw. That's optimistic. Arsenal versus Bournemouth. Oh, what's your score? You said 2-1?
I said 2-0.
I'm too excited. Arsenal versus Bournemouth.
I think Arsenal keep doing the business. This is a 3-0.
5-0 Arsenal. Beat down. Bukayo Saka hat trick. Villa versus Palace.
Palace are bad, man. They're annoying because if I bet against them, they'll find a way to win or draw. But I'm going to go Villa 1-0.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1 Villa. I've actually been impressed with Villa over these past few weeks. I think they're a solid team and they can score, which is more than you can say about basically the entire bottom half of the league. They have a lot of trouble scoring. And Palace, they haven't been great, but Palace can give anyone a game and they can win any game, I think.
Well, they love to draw. So you probably should just pick a draw, but yeah.
It's probably a good bet. Brighton versus West Ham.
So this one's kind of tough because Brighton have been very, very good. West Ham have finally kind of turned a corner a bit lately. I think they've looked a lot better. So I'm actually going to go 2-2 draw.
I'll follow you on that 2-2. Chelsea versus Leeds.
This is the win for Chelsea. 1-0 Chelsea.
2-1 Leeds. Last minute goal from Crescenzio Somerville.
Wow. Okay.
Wolves versus Spurs.
1-0 Spurs.
I'll go 2-0 Spurs. Southampton versus Leicester.
So I'm going to pick a 1-1 draw.
Ooh, interesting. I'll go 2-0 Leicester. Sunday, March 5th, Forest versus Everton. Huge game in the relegation battle.
Yeah, I'm going 1-1 for this because I actually think Forest are a decent team, but I don't think they have enough to necessarily win. So I'm gonna
1-0 Forest. Huge game, Liverpool versus United.
Michael, do you want to do the honor or do you want me to say it?
It's a boring one. You're picking 0-0.
I'm going 0-0.
I hate it. I don't know. I think this is going to be probably a United win, but I'm going to pick against them because it's at Anfield. I'll say 2-1 Liverpool.
Okay. I'm sticking by the 0-0.
All right. I think more likely it will probably be 2-1 United. If gun to my head, I had to bet it, I would bet United, but I'm going to pick 2-1 Liverpool.
Okay.
And then Monday, March 6th, our final game of the week, Brentford versus Fulham.
This is another 1-1. I've been very impressed with Fulham, I have to say. Very, very impressed with them. I can't believe they're in seventh, which is crazy to me. Brighton, obviously, also super impressive team. Brentford as well. Like, there's a lot of teams when you look at the table and you're like, wait a minute, how are these teams up here? Like, that's your 7, 8, and 9. Like, and I think they've all been really, really impressive. So I'm going to just split it 1-1.
All right. Yeah, I'll follow you on 1-1. I think that's fair. Brentford and Fulham both been excellent this season. I'm happy for both of those teams. I think they deserve some happiness, especially Fulham, who go up and down every single year.
True that.
But I think that's it, Jimmy. Do you want to hit them with the plugs?
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Soccer Mostly. You can email us mostlysoccershow@gmail.com. Last time we asked for a 5-star review after not getting reviews for 100 years, we got one. So let's ask again, please. It would be nice doing it in honor of Michael's crazy trip.
Yeah. I do have one final ask. If the folks who are listening to this podcast could go check out the Authentic Abstraction First Responder Foundation Kickstarter. It's live now, almost fully funded in almost 2 days. Please go check that out. There are links on the Twitter somewhere. You can find them. Search it on Kickstarter and consider donating your money. Give it all.
There you go.
All right.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.